Welcome to The Breakaway, a Sacramento Republic podcast.
Bandit in the box! Unbelievable strike!
My goodness, what a defensive play!
Half the crowd can't even believe it!
Welcome into The Breakaway, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Connor Sutton. This is episode 5 of this brand new podcast. And on this week's pod, we have the wonderful Villian Bijev, one of the nicest people I truly have ever met, and truly incredible in our community. He is always happy to go talk to a group of young soccer players, always happy to help in any way he can. And he's just one of the top-notch people that we've had on our club at Sacramento Republic. Talked to him a little bit about his career, not only in Sacramento, but of course he was at the Timbers before coming to Sacramento, played in Europe a little while in Belgium. He was actually born in Belgium. So a really good interview with Villian Bijev. And so I'm very excited for you all to hear that. But before we do that, our presenting partner of this podcast is UC Davis Health, who is on the front line of the coronavirus pandemic. And they are doing an unbelievable job of keeping us all safe and keeping us all informed. So thank you to all the healthcare professionals for UC Davis Health and all healthcare professionals around the world who are just kicking his butt as much as they can during this time. So we thank you to them. All right, let's get to the winger, Villian Bijev. All right, we now welcome on the Sacramento Republic FC midfielder slash winger, Villian Bijev. Villian, thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you doing? Everybody staying healthy during this quarantine?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to talk to you guys and kind of share my story with you. And yeah, I've been staying super active and super healthy during this time.
How are you guys? I know you've been doing a lot of virtual training. We've been seeing that on social. How has that been going? You're doing it a lot of times in front of a Zoom call, in front of a camera. What is that like?
It's definitely different, and it's been an adjustment. But being able to have this kind of technology and still be able to see our teammates and our trainers and our coaches, it helps so much because it helps keep us accountable. But we also still get to, you know, relate and joke and, you know, see face to face our teammates and see what we look like. And got everyone's hairs growing out right now because no barbershops are open, and just a little bit of banter and humor that we can pass on from one another and have that human contact without the contact. Yeah, I think has been super helpful.
What types of technical drills are you able to work on? I mean, how are you trying to stay sharp? Is it, you know, going to work on things outside? What do you work on when you're by yourself like that?
It's been a lot of body weight physical exercises, as well as a lot of running, a lot of fitness. And then luckily I have my roommate who is Andrew, and we can go out and work together. So I have someone who I can, you know, pass with and hit long balls. And we do a lot of, you know, one person will toss the ball, the other person will volley it back inside of the foot, laces, do some half volleys. That way we can still get a lot of touches on the ball. So I've been fortunate enough to have him. And if I'm ever on my own, just going up against a wall can also be super helpful. I found that I can get, you know, hundreds of touches in easily just by passing a ball against a wall. So that's
how do you think that transition back to when we eventually start playing and practicing again, is that transition going to be a little bit tough because you guys haven't been playing very much together in the last month and a half?
Oh, definitely. It's as we get longer and longer with the stay at home orders and the quarantines, it just becomes more and more like an off season where, you know, several months are going by and you're not with your teammates and you're just kind of training and preparing on your own. And there's nothing that you can do on your own can compare to like a team training or a exercise with, you know, 10, 15, 20 players around you. You know, I can work on passing with like two walls that are at 90 degrees. So I can pass off one wall and take a half turn, pass off the other wall, but nothing compares to when you have, you know, moving pieces all around you. Someone's trying to take the ball away from you while your teammates are also moving and you're having to adjust on the fly. And I think the decision making is what you can't really train on your own at a time like this. So it'll definitely be an adjustment to come back, but that's when I think they're talking about maybe having like a 1 or 2 week kind of build up period where we're allowed to train before we play some games, and we'll definitely be using that to sharpen up those skills again.
And what has your initial thoughts been about Mark Briggs? You guys have been around him for a while. What has he been like in the preseason, and now what has he been like during this quarantine? How has his leadership been important?
From the first time I met Mark, he's kind of like instilled or reinstilled a belief in myself. So he's great at player management, and I think he's really good at getting the best out of his players, and that he's definitely done that for me. Since he came here, I had like a new fire lit under me. I've been wanting to work a lot harder. I've been wanting to prove myself. I've been wanting to show and play at my full potential. So it's been really exciting for me. And during this time, he's been great, thinking of new ways to keep us motivated, keep us accountable. We have Zoom meetings outside of our trainings also each week to kind of check in, and he'll just talk to the group, say what his thoughts are, say, give us any updates and things like that. So I think he's done a really good job at a time like this.
And going into a little bit more of the soccer aspect of his coaching, is this new high attacking offensive style that gives someone like you, who is an attacking player, does that give you a little bit more of an advantage? And is it more of a style that you enjoy playing?
It definitely is. As an attacking player, it's a lot more exciting for me. We get forward a lot more with the high press. The idea is to win the ball higher up the field and be closer to the goal when we win it. And I definitely like it a lot. I wouldn't say it's a new system for me. I think with the way Barcelona has been playing in the last, 10, 12 years, and their style, a lot of teams have wanted to play that way. Mm-hmm. The difference with Mark is he's not just like, hey guys, we want to play like this, let's go do it. He's like, hey, this is the personnel we have, and this is the best way we can go about approaching this style that I want to play. And I think that's what kind of separates him. He knows how to utilize the players that he has to maximize his goal of playing a certain way. And that's been really exciting to see and really exciting to be a part of.
And is that something that, it's kind of unfortunate the season came to a halt because there was so much anticipation for this new attacking offense and the ability for you guys to be able to score more goals this year? Is that something you were looking forward to and you are looking forward to as the season continues?
Oh, definitely. It was unfortunate. We went through our whole preseason. I think we had a great preseason. We got out of it what we wanted to get out of it. First game started. We were able to play out the first game, get a tie, but still play at home, and you get that taste, for the fans, for the atmosphere, for the excitement of playing again. And then, unfortunately, everything that's happened has happened, and we weren't able to play even our second game. So it was kind of like a little teaser, but at the same time, I think it's been a motivator to stay fit, to keep putting in the work. I'm actually working harder now in this past month than I think I've worked in any set month before.
Wow.
The workouts that they're giving us are very hard, but at the same time, they're making it competitive. And with that comes the accountability of putting in the work to do it. And that's enough to motivate me to push myself kind of past my limits. So it's been an exciting time as well to grow. But obviously we'd much rather be playing this season right now.
Definitely. And can you take me back a little bit to opening night? I know it was almost 2 months ago. Wow, almost 2 months ago. That's insane. What was that experience like? And it just felt like the crowd was so excited. It was so packed. Is that the loudest? I mean, you've been here 4 years. Is that the loudest you think it's been since you started playing in Sacramento?
It was definitely loud. It was a super exciting. It was amazing to see everyone out there. Again, it was what we've been building all preseason too, was for that game. We had a little taste the week before when we played the last preseason game at home as well. And that was super exciting in and of itself. And then to have the season actually start and we were so excited the whole time to have the first game of the season at home because we knew our fans give us such a huge advantage. Sometimes you can go away to these stadiums and they have, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 fans, which is great, but you can't compare it to our stadium when it's packed and our fans are screaming the whole time, cheering us on. Mm-hmm. There's nothing quite like it. And like I said, the first game of the season was a tease. It was exactly what we wanted. And then to not be able to continue and build on that has just been a motivator to work harder. So when we come back, instead of, you know, tying that game, we can win that game and have even more excitement with our fans.
This is your fourth year, you know, really 3.5 years. You came on to Sacramento and alone from 2017. But what has your experience overall been like playing in Sacramento and living in Sacramento?
It's the place, out of all the places I've played, it's the place I felt the most at home. It's the place I've had the best connection with the community, with the fans, with my teammates, coaches, and front office staff. The way they approach their business model and everything they stand for and that they want to do, they want to be indomitable, they want to help the community first, you know, they want to have loyal fans who are at every game, they want to try to pack the seats. And as a club, I feel like they do everything they can to make all of those things happen. And it's a club I'm very proud to be a part of. And it's given me so many opportunities as well to do, you know, community outreach work, to bond with fans and create relationships, as well as make friendships within the front office. And then it goes without saying, build relationships with my teammates as well on and off the field.
And I know you're such a community-driven guy. How important for you is it to help out in your community?
Oh, it's super important. I think one thing I learned, you know, early on in my soccer career is you're only a professional soccer player for so long. And as soon as you stop playing professional soccer, you're no longer a professional soccer player. So I want to use the platform that I have now and maximize that platform. I want to use it to the best of my ability. If one of my favorite places to go is UC Davis Health. I think they're an amazing partner and it's an amazing community project that they're doing. And to go visit, you know, kids who are doing any kind of physical rehab in the hospital or the intensive care unit I've been to as well. And just to go visit those people, even they don't even have to know who the team is, just telling them, oh, this is a professional soccer player, is enough to get them so excited and engaged. And I love having conversations with them. And I also see it as a learning opportunity for myself as well, because they have so much they can teach me, and hearing their stories and their struggles and everything they're going through to kind of either heal or get better or physically improve, it just further motivates me as well. And if I can even be give them maybe one smile for 5 minutes throughout the day, you know, it's been super worth it for me. And that's one of my favorite things to do. But helping the community is what a strong leader in the community, which is what Sac Republic is and wants to be. They're a leader in the community. And I think the biggest thing is a quote I really like is, you can't rise if everybody else is going to fall. Right? Sac is a club that wants to rise and bring Sacramento as a city and a community up with them. And that's something they've been able to do. And I'm very fortunate to be a part of that in any way I can.
And I know you are just one of the kindest people I've ever met. Every time you come into the office, you come over and say hi and talk with pretty much everybody in the office. And that is such a unique thing for a professional player like yourself to do so. And I know even when you get out in the community with the various appearances, you're just so welcoming and kind to not only kids, whether it's the elderly, with whoever it is truly incredible to watch you care about the community and care about the people you are interacting with. So I thank you for that. It is something that you don't see very often. So thank you for that.
Oh, no problem at all. I think it's easy to do, is just how everyone chooses to delegate their time. You know, for me, it's a pleasure to come and talk to people and just learn about them and their stories and everything that's going on in their lives as well. And there's no, I think if other players don't do that, I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. They would just, maybe they cope or work out their own things in different ways, or they like to rest and recover in different ways. And I just enjoy being around people and getting that energy that they have to give and also sharing my energy with them. So that's all it is.
When you came initially to Sacramento, you came on loan in 2017 from the Portland Timbers. What did you expect initially when coming to Sacramento? How much did you know about the club and what were your expectations?
So I'd played against Sac, I'm pretty sure, four times by then.
Okay.
So two times I had been played in Sac, two times Sac played us in Portland. So I had seen the stadium, I had seen the fans, I knew what the atmosphere was like, which compared to T2, you know, it was night and day. You can closer compare it to Timbers' first team, which I was fortunate enough to get to go to a ton of games when I was in Portland to see the first team play as well. So I'm pretty sure Sac beat us. We'd have to go back and look at it. I'm not sure. Maybe three out of the four times. But I remember the last time I played in Sac, I scored a penalty. I don't remember if we ended up winning that game. Maybe we tied. But I scored a penalty. It was right in front of TBB. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, this is a professional club. You know, this is what I want to be a part of eventually. And so for me, I was super lucky and awestruck when Sac reached out and were like, hey, we want to take you on loan. At the time, that was when eight teams made the playoffs. I think they were in like sixth, seventh, eighth place maybe at the time. And they were really making a playoff push. And I was like, you know what? And by that time, T2, I think we were maybe bottom of the league or second to bottom. So we knew we wouldn't be making playoffs. I was also the oldest on the T2 team. And I think I was only 24 years old at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, it just, if I had a chance to make it to the first team, it would have been a great place for me to be. At the time, they had kind of decided with the coaching staff that they had that I wasn't what they were looking for the first team. And it was a no-brainer for me to come to Sac, where it was extremely competitive nature. They had so many good players, and a lot of guys were on the bench who could easily have been starters in most teams in the USL at the time. So I thought, you know, this is definitely where I want to be. Also, I'm in California, which is, you know, where I grew up. I was just 2.5 hours from home. My parents were able to come to every single game.
Wow.
So kind of making the decision to come on loan here was fairly easy.
Yeah. So April, I just looked it up. April 23rd, 2017, you guys won Portland Timbers 2-0 against Sacramento, and you scored a PK. So April 23rd, not long before you were loaned.
Yeah. So I'm sure that maybe played a part in them wanting to take me on loan.
Right. Coming into this season here in 2020, you know, a lot of expectations for you play as the players and the staff, but how confident were you guys coming into this season?
I think we were very confident. We were re-energized. I think the decision from the GM and ownership group and our president to bring back a majority of our players, I think, was an absolutely great tactical decision. The group that they were able to put together, I think if you ask any of the players in our locker room, this is probably one of the best locker rooms that they've ever been a part of. I know it's one of the best locker rooms I've ever been a part of.
Oh, wow.
So everyone was super excited that we kind of had that collective. And then the pieces that they added in, I think, have only been positive and beneficial as well. So having that main core group return, as well as these pieces that just fit in so well in during preseason, as well as adding the new coach, the new coaching staff, everyone was super excited. I think we all had extremely and still have extremely high expectations for the season. So I think just everything kind of clicked into place for us, and we were all super motivated and super excited and extremely confident in starting this season.
Okay, so you've played in Sacramento for 4 years. Do you have a top two most memorable goals? I know you've scored, let's see, I had the number written here. You've scored 9 goals. What not counting last year, what goals stick out to you in your mind? Do you have one?
Well, a couple. I mean, the first goal I scored for Sac Republic was against RGV, I'm pretty sure. Tyler Blackwood assisted me, and I smacked it like top of the net. We were at RGV. That goal is just super memorable because it was the first goal I scored for Sac Republic. Another goal is the free kick against the Earthquakes in the Open Cup.
I had that one highlighted. I figured that was going to be on here.
That was obviously, yeah, that was a sweet, sweet moment, and in an MLS stadium against an MLS team.
Right.
And I think probably my best goal was again in the Open Cup against LAFC in 2018.
Yeah.
And that was, again, I mean, we were pretty much playing their whole first team, an MLS team, and in their stadium as well. And then being a new team and a new stadium, that was super exciting. And I think the goal itself was a beautiful goal with a couple of 1-2s with some teammates who gave some great layoffs and great passes as well. Mm-hmm. So that combination of everything as well as like a great strike probably makes it one of the nicest goals.
And when you guys go into playing an MLS team on the road in a U.S. Open Cup atmosphere, does that game feel bigger to you? Do you have to mentally prepare yourself for maybe some more skilled players than you're used to seeing in the USL? And how do you prepare for that?
It's different. It's different because always when we go, we know we're the underdogs. We know, you know, the MLS teams are always expected to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's also how I think the format of the tournament is set up. The MLS teams come in later, so all the other teams have already played several games. And then the MLS teams come in. So I wouldn't say there's more preparation. If anything, it's the same because you always want to win. But sometimes during the league when we go, we're expected to win.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more of that pressure and expectation, like, oh, we should win this game. Like, we need to really focus and take care of business. Whereas when we go play those MLS teams, it's almost like, oh, we have nothing to lose.
Right.
It's almost freeing in a way that you can just play how you want to play and the expectations aren't as high. We still want to go in and win those games, but the outside pressure isn't as much as playing, you know, a league game against a team that we quote unquote should beat.
Right. And what about, do you have a favorite game or favorite moment playing for Sacramento? I know it's tough. I guess it probably could be some of your goals, right?
To have the jobs and the platform that we have.
Right.
And being out there on the field with him when he scored that goal and running to the fans and just celebrating everything. It was an absolutely amazing, special moment that it's a one-of-a-kind situation.
Yeah, it definitely was a one-of-a-kind moment for sure. Thank you for sharing that with us. One of my favorite moments in Sacramento public history for sure. So you've been here since 2017, as I've mentioned. Have you noticed, and what have you noticed about the growth of the club and soccer in Sacramento in your time here?
Let's see. I think obviously with the announcement of MLS, it's grown so much more than any other place I've ever been to, because this is the first place I've been to where they've made an announcement like that. Over the past few years, I've seen more and more new fans every year. I talk to people like, this is our first year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's extremely exciting to see, because soccer as a sport is growing all across the U.S. And then I think that's especially true for a city like Sacramento. Also, just talking to all the fans who have been season ticket holders since day one is absolutely amazing that they've stuck with the club through all these times. And, you know, they expected MLS sooner and then it didn't come. And then they kept pushing and kept fighting, and all these fans kept supporting the club and standing behind them and trusted that the club knew what they were doing and the people working on you know, bringing MLS to SAC would take care of business. And ultimately they did, which, you know, huge round of applause to them for all the work that they've put in to help grow the sport in Sacramento.
Let's take a break to talk about our wonderful initiative, Indomitable Hands. If you haven't seen what this program is about, you have to check it out. We can expand this incredible program. You can donate to Raley's Food for Families. What that means is we will bring a bag to someone who is vulnerable, homebound seniors who cannot afford the bags. We will drop them off at their front door. Obviously, we will not come into contact with them in any way. And people who are at risk in self-isolation or in quarantine, those are the people that we want to help. They have a bunch of ready-to-go bags. We've already done over 500 deliveries, and we can continue to do them right now with your help at sacrepublicfc.com/senior-essential-bags. You can donate or you can nominate someone who is at risk. We'd be happy to drop those off. Another cool initiative we have going on right now is Class Zoom Surprises. I'm happy to be a part of this one where you can have, if you are a teacher, even if you have a youth team, youth soccer team, and you want to have a Sac Republic player or coach, jump in and surprise your kids on a Zoom call. You can go to sacrepublicfc.com and you can sign up for a time, and we will have one of the players jump in on your call. Could be a cool opportunity to keep kids, you know, excited about school. I know this is such a strange time, and maybe this is a way that we can help and, you know, talk to the players, get to know them a little bit, kind of similar to what we're doing here on this podcast. So that's kind of what the goal of the program is. Obviously, to make a few kids' days and to get to know the players a little bit better and let the players, you know, have some fun and help out any way they can. So another cool initiative that we have going on, and that's presented by Smile Generation. And thank you to them for helping us keeping that going. So again, Indomitable Hands at sacrepublicfc.com/senior-essential-bags. And you can also, while you're there, you can check out Class Zoom Surprises. All right, back to Villian Bijev. And I want to transition a little bit to your time before coming to Sacramento. I know you were born in Bulgaria and moved to the U.S. when you were 5 years old. What was that transition like, and what do you remember about that move?
I don't remember much about the transition. Again, like you mentioned, I was 5 years old, so I don't have too many memories. I just, you know, I'm sure I was like playing with my toys, and I have a younger brother who's a year and a half younger than me, and just playing with my brother. So in Bulgaria, we just probably played together. And then now that we moved to the States, we still played together and hung out with my mom. I didn't know English when we moved here. And I know the first thing I was enrolled in when we moved to the States was kindergarten. And I don't remember learning English. I don't have many memories of kindergarten at all.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, at all. So I don't know. I'm obviously learned English just from listening to the teacher and being around it all the time in school. Mm-hmm. And I know my parents, the first 2 years especially, made it a task to only speak English in the house. So we would try to learn English as fast as possible. So I actually have no recollection of learning English. One thing I do remember is my kindergarten class. We had name tags. They were right by the front door. And when you first walked into the class, you would take your name tag and then go sit down. And my mom walked me to class every day. One thing I remember is my name tag was red. And the English and Bulgarian alphabets are different. So the letters are different. And my name is written differently in Bulgarian than in English. But I had memorized what characters my name was and that it was red. So they were red and yellow, the two name tags. And I don't know how far into the year this was, but I show up one day with my mom. She drops me off at the front door and starts walking my brother to his class. And I'm looking through the name tags, and the first thing I always look for is the red ones. So I looked through all the red ones and didn't see the characters that make up my name. And I was, you know, starting to freak out, starting to worry. So I ran down the hall after my mom and like told her, like, my name's not there. My name's not there. I don't know what happened. And so she walked me back to the class and picked out a yellow name tag and handed it to me and said, like, oh, it's right here. Your name's here. So my name tag had switched to yellow for whatever reason. The teacher decided to mix them up, I guess. And I think that's one of the earliest memories I have of moving to the States.
And you grew up in Fresno, you know, from that point on. What was youth soccer like for you I know soccer is really big in that area, but what was it? What was youth soccer like for you down there?
It was an absolute pleasure. I would say I probably had one of the luckiest, most fortunate experiences when it comes to youth soccer. I played for an amazing team called the Bullard Flyers when I was like 11 and 12 years old. I'm still very close with a lot of those players, and Elliot Horde was actually one of the players on that team.
Yeah.
So I'd played with him back when we were like 11, 12 years old, made amazing friendships on that team. And then when I was 13, I switched to Team California Odyssey. And since we were 13 years old, we kept that same core group of players until we finished playing youth soccer at 18.
Wow.
And some of my best friends to this day are from those teams. They're the guys I stay in touch with the most. And I had the opportunity to play on so many stages because of that team. So because of the Development Academy, we went to so many showcases with that team. We made it to the national finals 2 years in a row. Unfortunately, lost both times. So we got second place 2 years in a row. But it was still an amazing experience. The games were televised. I think they were on ESPN3 at the time. And as a kid, that's just so amazing.
Right.
Have the opportunity to play. And then because of the Development Academy, I was able to be scouted by our national system as well.
Right.
And then that led me to be on the U18 and U20 national teams for the U.S., which again was an amazing experience.
Right.
So I would say my youth soccer career in Fresno was nothing but positive.
And then talk me through your decision. So you originally signed to play college soccer at University of Washington in 2011, but instead you got an invite for a trial through Liverpool for the U18s and then ended up getting a contract for them. What was that decision like? Was it a tough decision to decide not to go to college and to go play for Liverpool at U18s?
No, it was not a tough decision at all. I was going overseas on trial since I was 16.
Okay.
So I knew professional soccer was what I wanted to do. That was my ultimate goal. That was always at the forefront of my mind. And also there was no doubt that I would play professional soccer. I had that. I just had that internal belief, and I can't explain why. So since I was 16, I was going overseas to go on trial. And then I had gone to my official visit at University of Washington. They were one of the colleges that recruited me the most heavily. I went on my official visit, really liked the campus, really liked the coach and everything. So I decided, of course, as a backup plan, I would verbally commit. And obviously, had I not signed a professional contract, I would have gone to University of Washington because it's an amazing school with an amazing program. They had a great soccer team. I think the next 4 or 5 years after I would have gone there, they had a really, really good program. So I had verbally committed. I'd signed the letter of intent, and we did the whole thing at my high school where they videotape it, and my parents showed up and my brother was there. So I had done that. But that summer after my senior year, I had gone back to Europe to go on trial. So I started at Dortmund. I actually trialed with Dortmund's second team. Jurgen Klopp was the coach at the time with the first team.
Really?
Yeah. That's when like Götze was there and all those players. So I trialed with their second team. Did a 3-week preseason with them, which was really tough. But again, great, amazing experience. Saw their training facilities and everything. And then they were kind of like, they weren't sure if they wanted to offer me anything or what they would offer me, or if it would even be a professional contract or maybe a schoolboy contract where I would be part of their academy, things like that. So there was nothing concrete there at the time that would make me go to Europe, or sorry, make me stay in Europe. And then because of that Dortmund trial, I was able to get a trial at Liverpool, thanks to my agent and his contacts. And he got me over to Liverpool. This was after I had done the 3-week preseason with Dortmund. I had an amazing trial with Liverpool, played really well, was able to show my abilities. And after that week, they decided to sign me. Kenny Dalglish was the head coach of the first team at the time. I had just finished a friendly on a Saturday afternoon, and I played the first half and had to leave at halftime because I had to catch my flight. I had a flight already booked to go back home to Fresno. As I'm walking back to the locker room at halftime, Kenny Dalglish is there with my agent, and he's like, hey, you know, we think you're an amazing player. We'd like to sign you. What would you say to that? And I just remember thinking, like, this is so surreal.
Yeah.
This is just, this is like one of the greatest players in the history of soccer, or, you know, one of the, in the English game for sure, is there. He's coaching the team. He's the head coach of the first team. And he's asking me if I would like to sign. And I'm just like, yes. So yes, it's to me, it's a no-brainer. It's not even a question. So he's asking me, and I say yes, and I go back to the locker room immediately, call my dad. It was the afternoon in Liverpool, so I think it was like 3 a.m. back here, Fresno, and I called. I think I maybe called once or twice, and my dad answered. Because me being in Europe, he always had his phone on ring. And I was telling him, like, hey, they want to sign me. They offered me a contract. And we were just both just screaming back and forth, super excited. And I went straight to the airport, flew home for about a week, packed all my stuff, got everything in order, and then moved to Europe.
Wow.
So it was extremely exciting. You know, I couldn't have written a better beginning to my professional career.
Right. What a whirlwind that must have been. Wow. Incredible.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about those 3 years as a part of the Liverpool club. I know you went on loan with Fortuna Düsseldorf, and then to later on you started playing Bulgaria later. But what was that 3 year stretch like where you're being loaned from Liverpool to other teams?
It was extremely difficult. It was huge learning point in my life. Again, I think this will segue into my youth soccer career and having a professional team in my city. So not having a professional team in Fresno growing up, I never got to see what it was like to be a professional. I only saw it on TV when I'd watch, you know, the big games and whatever coverage they had of, you know, Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar at the time, those kinds of players that were, you know, the best of the best. And that's all I got to see of the professional game. I never got to see, you know, the other 99% of professional soccer. And going from paying to play on a club team and training three times a week to all of a sudden being in Europe, being paid to play, you know, you're training every single day. This is your only job. It's your profession. Was just a huge wake up call for me. And I didn't know what to expect. Of course, I wasn't prepared. I think my first year I went on loan to Fortuna Düsseldorf. I couldn't get a work permit in England, you know, even with my Bulgarian passport. So they sent me on loan, and we knew that would be the case when I first signed.
Oh, okay.
We were expecting it would just be for 1 year. It ended up being for about a year and a half. But so the first year I went to Fortuna Düsseldorf, I was the youngest player on the first team.
Wow.
Again, I don't speak any German. I didn't know anybody there. So it was just kind of, you're just thrown into this thing where you have to adapt or die. You know, you're either going to adapt or you won't, and you'll just fade away. And I just go home after 6 months or something like that. So it was a real struggle to try to adapt, try to set up, you know, my bank account in Germany, try to find an apartment where I was going to live, you know, do all these things, all of a sudden start shopping for myself, cooking for myself, completely taking care of my own home. Just kind of thrown into the deep end, and I was able to handle it. It wasn't anything extremely difficult. And then from the playing aspect, it's, you got to understand, I'm going to a German club. I'm an American player. I'm the youngest player also. So it was like every little thing that happened on the field was my fault. If I would, you know, we're doing a passing drill and my pass is even, you know, 1-2 feet away from a veteran player's foot and it rolls away, instead of them reaching out to get it, it's like, oh, come on, give a better pass. And that wasn't, I'm not like, you know, whining about that, because that also helped me to focus in more on my passing and be even more precise, because I'm thinking like, oh, I don't want to get yelled at. So now I need to like really make sure my passes are as perfect as possible, or my crosses are great, or that I'm finishing opportunities that they give me.
Mm-hmm.
But during that year, I got yelled at for everything. You know, you'd miss a shot, I get screamed at. You'd, you know, pass it wrong, get screamed at directly. There was no coddling. There was no hand holding. It was straight into the thick of it and business 24/7. And so having that in one sense helped me. And in another sense also, it definitely killed my confidence a bit, because it was just always nagging, 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 nagging. There was no one was, you know, trying to lift me up or help me out, because why would they? They have their own careers to take care of. They have their own, you know, mouths to feed and their families to take care of. So it was just kind of every man for themselves in that type of atmosphere. And then after that Fortuna Dusseldorf loan, I've moved back to England for a little bit. Still wasn't able to get the work permit and went on loan to IK Start in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a beautiful country. But just like in Germany, Liverpool still owned my contract and still paid my salary. So these clubs, they had no invested interest in me.
Mm.
They weren't paying me. And were I to one day make it big and be sold, they wouldn't get anything out of it. And right. Liverpool did that on purpose, you know, to protect their investment. So these clubs didn't have any invested interest in me. So they didn't treat me horribly, but they didn't treat me like one of their own players.
Right.
Who they're more invested in. And now as I've gotten older, I understand that, because that's what business is ultimately. So I went on loan there for 3 or 4 months towards the end of
2012, right?
2012. Yes. The last few months of 2012. Then after that, I think the Norway season ended in October or November. I flew back to England, and then I was in England for the next year and a half.
And then from there, you go to play in Bulgaria. You know, you played on the Bulgaria national team, the U21s. What was it like kind of going home? I know you probably don't remember much from living in Bulgaria when you're under five, but did it kind of feel like you were going home a little bit when you went to go play in Bulgaria?
It felt like I was getting an opportunity to see where my parents grew up and where I was born, and the culture of my family and my roots. Mm-hmm. I was definitely excited to go back and see all of that and experience it all. But at the same time, having grown up in the States, I couldn't relate to the people there the same way I could relate to my friends back home.
Mm-hmm.
The way I grew up and the TV shows I watched and the things I experienced, the references I could make weren't the same as those of someone who grew up in Bulgaria and lived their whole life there, because they experienced different things. Also, my English is much better than my Bulgarian, so I can express myself and speak a lot easier and more freely in English. So being in these other countries where I didn't speak the language as well, made it more difficult to kind of express myself. And there was always some frustration of, oh, I want to get some kind of point across, but I can't because I don't know the language as well. So that definitely played into it. And but Bulgaria was great. It was a great learning experience also. Everywhere I've been, I always try to learn something. And playing first division in Bulgaria was good for me. It was definitely strengthened me a lot mentally and
mm-hmm.
helped me to persevere.
So following a couple seasons in Bulgaria, in 2016, you come back to play in the U.S. for the Timbers. What went into that decision? Did you know you wanted to come back to the States, or did an opportunity pop up with the Timbers and then you decided to come back? How did that unfold?
I knew I wanted to come back to the States. I was, throughout my whole stint in Europe, I was very homesick constantly and missed my friends, missed my home.
Sure, understandably.
A lot. Wasn't ever fully able to cope with it as well as I would have liked. But ultimately, I made the decision that I want to come home. I want to be closer to my family. This is how I wanted to spend my life, as opposed to, you know, continuing to grind it out in Europe and missing all these years with my family. Although the trade-off could be I could have, you know, maybe played at a much higher level and made a lot more money playing football in Europe. Mm-hmm. But for me, the more important thing was spending time with my family and friends and nurturing those relationships and building those relationships. And I just knew that's what I wanted to do. So that's why I made the decision to come back to the States. Ultimately, coming back, I thought I'd be able to play MLS, especially the career I had in Europe and the places I'd been. I thought, okay, I can come back and I can get on an MLS team and then work to prove myself in the MLS. So again, play at a really high level while at the same time being in America, which is, mm-hmm. you know, where I grew up. So that's what kind of came together to make that decision. And then once I was already back, then I contacted an agency and said, hey, do you guys have any interest in working with me? I want to play soccer in America. They were very keen on working with me, and we started to build a relationship. Then they took me on trial to T2. I did really well, ended up signing there. And that's kind of how everything started with me coming back to the States. And again, I love my time in Portland. I have only good things to say about the club and the city and the people there as well. It was a great experience.
You played in front of the, you know, you've been a part of the incredible fan base in Timbers in Portland. You know what that's like. Do you think that Sacramento is going to be have as rabid of a fan base when they come MLS, or do they already have that pretty much built now in the USL with the Republic now?
They definitely have the base built now already. Just to have the season ticket holders who have been a part of this club from the beginning, as well as all the new ones that keep joining and building up the numbers, they definitely have that base. I think once the stadium's built as well, that'll give the fans a more permanent home where they can really feel like, oh, this is our house.
Yeah.
And once that's all ready, I think the fans in Sacramento will make that stadium their own, and it's going to be a fortress. And I, whether I'm part of the club or not, I'm so excited to see that unfold. And when I'm done playing, I'm definitely going to be a Sac Republic fan and be going to those MLS games.
Yeah. You know, kind of during your time when you're in the USL, when you found out Fresno was getting a team, that's where you grew up, were you excited that, you know, Fresno FC was becoming a thing? And what was your reaction when you found out that they ended up folding?
When I first found out that they were going to be a team, I was extremely excited. I was thinking, Fresno is definitely a city that should have a professional team. Mm-hmm. The youth soccer there is incredible. There's so much talent in the Central Valley. So I was extremely excited also because it's just one thing. Me growing up there thinking like, oh, I really wish we had a professional team. We had, you know, the Fresno Fuego, which was great because they were a higher level than club soccer, but they weren't mm-hmm. quite a professional team. So when I found out Fresno FC was going, I thought this is exactly what youth soccer in the area needs. They need, you know, a team to look forward to as well as a team to learn from. So like I mentioned earlier, when I was growing up there, we didn't have a pro team. I was fortunate enough to become a professional player. But there was just that huge learning gap that going from club soccer to pro doesn't, mm-hmm. you can't learn that. But having a pro team in your city and getting to kind of interact with the players through community events and getting to learn their stories as, you know, interviews are done or like this when podcasts are done, I think that would have been invaluable for the kids. So when I found mm-hmm. out that it was folding, I was extremely disappointed.
Yeah.
It was really sad to see, but I also think another team will pop up in Fresno. That I think it's an amazing market as well as great talent. So I hope they come up with another team.
All right, last question. Is your ultimate goal to get back to MLS, or do you still have eyes on playing internationally overseas somewhere?
My ultimate goal is to play MLS. That was okay. My goal when I came back from Europe. I had made the decision when I decided to come back that my goal would be to play MLS. I knew coming back from Europe to play USL and then going again to Europe to play would be extremely difficult. How few players go from Europe to USL and then back to Europe, I don't know. I'm sure it's very, very few. So at the time when I made the decision, I was very conscious of my goals and what I wanted to do. And my first goal, even immediately coming back from Europe, was to play MLS. And it's taken more years than I planned, but it still remains my goal. And I do think I'll be able to achieve that.
All right. Now we got a couple fun questions. It's time for Rayleigh's rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
Yes. All right. This is one I wanted to almost, I almost opened the podcast with this because I was curious about it. Why did you start doing the Mohawk and when did that start?
Mohawk started. So let's start. The first time I bleached my hair was my second year in Portland. And a couple other guys had done it. I'd always thought to do it. You know, Messi had done it too. Neymar had done it. A lot of big name players were doing it. And then like one or two other guys on my team had done it. And I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to kind of bleach my hair. As a kid, I always wanted to have like colored tips.
Yeah.
So that's when I first bleached my hair. And I didn't have the style of the Mohawk yet.
Okay.
But I knew I wanted to do something different. I have a cowlick and I had done a comb over a lot of my life, you know, many years of my life. I just had a kind of a simple comb over. I just left my hair, let it do what it wanted.
Right.
So after I bleached my hair in Portland, I found a barber, a lady who was really good. She saw my hair. I was like, kind of like, what do you think we should do? And she recommended we do kind of like a, I'd say like a half mohawk where it came down at a point towards the back of my head, but then the back was kind of shaved like the sides. So the mohawk didn't go all the way down to the side.
Right.
And we started that, and I started, a lot of guys on my team made fun of me and called me Megan Rapinoe at the time because I was right when she had that hairstyle.
Right, right.
And actually put a picture of her above my locker in Portland. So it was.
Hey, that's not funny. That is not a bad comp. I mean, that's a pretty good person to like, be.
I was like, thank you guys.
Yeah.
You know,
she's one of the greatest.
She's super good looking, very good soccer player as well. So I was like, you know what? I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
And I didn't have so much of the facial hair back then too. So I kind of had a baby face. And that's kind of how it started. And from there, I was like, I don't really want to cut it down just a little bit. I want to let it grow all the way back. So my first full year in Sacramento, I was introduced to a different barber. His name's, he owns Black Black. His name's Justin Thomas. Mm. He owns Black Black Barbershop, and he's a phenomenal barber. And he just kind of looked at my hair and said, hey, I think this would look great on you. He knew I was a professional player and said, hey, this would look really cool. So he cut it in the style that it's in right now. And I've been going to him ever since for like three and a half years now. And we've kind of kept the same style.
Awesome. It's a good story. I was curious. I didn't know when it started. So it's good to hear. All right. Favorite artist?
Musician?
Yes.
Eminem.
Oh, okay.
I just grew up.
Bleached hair on point.
There you go. It's Slim Shady. that definitely fed into my want to bleach my own hair. But I think ever since I was 11, 12 years old, using like LimeWire and Apple Music.
Yes.
I just listened to a ton of Eminem and just really liked it. It got me pumped for soccer games as well. And just really enjoyed his music.
I'm a big LimeWire fan. I'm with you on that. All right. Next is favorite guilty pleasure movie.
Favorite guilty pleasure movie.
Yeah, no, a movie that, you know, you like a lot and you don't really know why, I guess.
I wouldn't say I don't know why. I know why, but I would say the animated movie where the different emotions are like a different color and they're inside
Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Nice. Okay.
And I I cried like a baby at the end of that movie.
Wow.
But it's a lot. It's like I can relate to it a little bit because it's, she leaves her parents, thinks she has it better, and then comes back home and realizes. And that's kind of my story in a way. I was so excited to leave home at a young age and was able to do that, that, you know, I wanted to come back home.
Is that a Disney movie? I think it's DreamWorks.
It's DreamWorks, Pixar, Disney. It's one of those.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's Pixar.
Those are always good. Can't go wrong there.
Yeah.
Right. Most fantastic goal you've ever scored?
I really like that LAFC one in the playoffs.
How far out was that?
It wasn't too far out, top of the circle of the 18.
Yeah. So you wouldn't say it was a billion miles away?
I would not. Actually, now that is brilliant. I need to start shooting from half field.
There you go. I got you. Just so you know, I tried to do this with Cam and come up with a name for his goals. Your name, I the only thing I could think of was a billion miles away. Him, I had a cammy whammy for him.
That's not bad.
Yeah, he doesn't like it too much. That's okay. Cam Burger, Cammy Whammy, those are both the ones I had for him. But I like a billion miles away. It's good.
Where there's a vill, there's a way.
There you go. That's a good one, too.
I like that one. But that one was good, too, because it was just like such a long ball. I took a touch out of the air, a couple of 1-2s. So I think it was just a super pretty goal. Also, at the time in the game, I think it was to put us up 2-1.
Right.
Which was super exciting and against an MLS team also. So.
All right, what are your thoughts on having playoffs compared to not having playoffs? So the American style compared to the European style.
So from a business point of view, as well as keeping teams engaged, having playoffs makes more sense. The way USL teams make a lot of their money is getting fans in stadiums. So by having extra games and more incentive for teams to play in the playoffs, from a business point of view, I think it makes more sense. Also, having grown up in America, having playoffs is like a standard part of everything, even as a kid.
Right.
So it does make sense that, you know, the best team should work their way through playoffs. But I think having the winner at the end of the league is the most fair way. You have the league, you have this amount of games. When it first starts, everybody knows how many games you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do your best you can in that amount of space. And if you can win the league, you win the league.
And I think one thing that makes it more able to do this in European is the Euros and the Champions League and things like that. So even if you're not competing for first, you can still compete for fourth to get into a Champions League spot, or, you know what I mean? So I think that's one thing that isn't in place in America, and one of the reasons why having playoffs is so important, especially at the USL and MLS level too. So not that we asked for my thoughts, but I was just thinking about
that. Those were good thoughts. I completely agree. The incentive to have more teams make the playoffs is good, especially with the system we have here.
Right. Right. All right. Why do you wear number 20?
Number 20. I wore number 20 in Bulgaria. Don't remember specifically why I chose it. I came halfway through the season. I switched teams in Bulgaria. So the second team I went to, I think that might have been just one of the numbers that they had available that I liked that wasn't, you know, above 30 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had chosen 20 then and have just stuck with it since.
Favorite place to visit? Or vacation?
Favorite place to vacation? My grandpa in Bulgaria has like a garden / farm area that's about 10 minutes from his apartment where he lives in Bulgaria. And they have, it's like a little estate. They have a little house. That's like it has a kitchen, and it's like a 1-2 bedroom house, very small. And it's on this land that has a lot of vegetables and fruits and trees that he grows and cultivates. And I just have a lot of memories as a kid going to visit there. I remember they had a tire swing.
Mm.
And it just has a lot of positive memories for me.
Yeah.
And every time I've been in his city in Bulgaria, I've always gone there to visit it. And that's probably one of the places where I feel just the most at ease and at peace and just relaxed. And then also all the fresh fruits and vegetables and everything they just taste amazing. You can't compare it.
Favorite non-soccer sports team, pro sports team?
Lakers.
You and Rodrigo and Jaime, all Laker fans.
Oh, man. I was, since we moved here in 1998, I remember maybe in like 2000, 2001, the only games, basketball games that were on TV where I lived were Laker games. And it was always Lakers Kings, because that was just the marketing area we were in. And those are the only games I can watch. We didn't have, you know, NBA TV or even ESPN. We just had the local channels, and those were the only games I was able to watch.
Right.
And at the time, the Lakers being so dominant made it just super easy to watch them and root for them and be fans of them.
Yeah.
And it stemmed from there, and I just grew to love Kobe Bryant as a player as well. He's my favorite basketball player, so
yeah,
to go with the Lakers.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, Villian, I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast. This was a little bit longer than what I initially told you, so I apologize for that, but this was excellent. I appreciate you letting us get to know you a little bit better and get to know your backstory and how you ended up in Sacramento, so I appreciate it.
No problem at all. I think you did a great job of curating the talk, and the questions you asked were great, and thank you so much for having me on.
I appreciate it, man, and I hope to see you soon. Hopefully when this ends, we'll see you out at Papa Murphy's Park, hopefully sooner rather than later.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Me neither, man. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
No problem. Take care.
All right. Bye. My thanks to Villian Bija for coming on. My thanks to you for listening to the extent of this podcast. If you have someone you would like for us to have on, please let us know. TheBreakaway@SacRepublicFC.com. We have so many incredible people, not only within the soccer community in Sacramento and the Sacramento Republic, but we have so many people in our area who are so important to us, especially during this time. So if you have someone who you would like to hear on our podcast, please let us know at TheBreakaway@SacRepublicFC.com. Next week, who do we have? We don't know yet. No, we do. I'm just kidding. We'll just have to wait and find out. We'll see you next week on The Breakaway.